So thank you, Cheryl, for organizing this session. And as Cheryl mentioned, my presentation here is in some ways similar, but uses a very different method. And I think what's interesting is in a way to sort of look at the two as a pair, in a sense. And I want to also, thank my co-authors, Anne Lown, who's here, and Sarah, who isn't, Jason, our superlative statistician, and Yu Yi as well, Cheryl, of course, here, and Guy, who will be presenting later on. Okay, so nothing to declare. So basically, this somewhat repeats, some of the presentation that Cheryl made, so I'll move right through it. But the key here is, in this paper, I'm using segmentation analysis, which is a kind of a data mining technique. There are some disadvantages to that, but in this case, some interesting things are revealed by doing it this way. This is basically, a similar description, and since Cheryl already covered this, I won't stay with the slide. And I emphasize the multi-stage area probability design, and that we used the census block groups with at least 70 plus percent Hispanics in these block groups. So that's how we focused on Hispanics in the U.S. Cheryl has already addressed this to some extent. One thing I'd mention is that it's a 12-month measure I'm using, it takes advantage of all the beverage types in its approach to assessing, and that's been found to result in somewhat better coverage of the alcohol volume. And then we also, in my case, are using the maximum drinking rather than using 5+, which Cheryl used. I'm using all the levels from 5+, 8+, and 12+ to characterize the drinking pattern. The AUD is the fifth revision. Basically, the methodology is this chi-squared automatic introduction detection, or CHAID. And in step one, we partition the drinking volume, and we actually partitioned it into 9 different levels. And then we look empirically at what levels can be combined, or what levels actually are distinct, more to the point. And so it reduces the number from 9 to, as you'll see, 4 distinct levels. That is, they're empirically different from each other. And then at the step 2, maximum is the variable that comes in, and for each of those volume levels, it searches for the maximum level that will differentiate that volume. And the conceptual aspect of this is, when you think of it, at a very high volume, everybody may have 5+, and most of them, in fact, do. But actually, 12+ may be the empirical variable that separates the bingers versus the spacers at that level. So that's kind of the concept here. Here is a table that sort of illustrates this. And let me focus first on the this level here. And what you see is that at this level of drinking, which is quite relatively low, less than 2 drinks a week, here, in fact, 5+ is the key variable. And you notice that actually the volume differs as well as the pattern. So this particular one, I would emphasize that while we've got a lot more DSM-5 prevalence at the high pattern, there's also a higher volume. But let me go to another level where it's quite interesting. This particular level also involves 5+. It's less than one drink a day, so this is, or up to one drink a day. And I should mention for shorthand that it's more than this amount and less than one drink a day, less than or equal to one drink a day. So it actually goes up to one drink a day. And here we see that the volume levels are actually almost identical. But these people are truly binging versus spacing their drinks. So the bingers, fully a quarter of them actually have alcohol dependence, even though the level of volume is not very, very significant. It's not usually thought of as very high. But at both of these volumes, a significant number of people classified in terms of DSM-4. This just summarizes some of these results, and I should have said that that was for men. Maybe you read that. You do see a pattern effect, but it's also a kind of a volume effect disguised as a pattern effect. It's both effects, essentially. But at a higher level, where the volumes are very similar, you also see quite different levels. And when you go up higher still, perhaps I should actually go back, at the higher still levels, again, the volume is much more similar in this level, and you can see that there are many, many more people with the high maximum pattern, in this case 8+, who actually are DSM-5 classified. So at the higher volumes, we see that the pattern is, in fact, as we think conceptually, it's divided by a much higher level of drinking in an occasion to show the pattern effect. So now we're going to model this. I'll just show you, first of all, before doing that, I'll just show you an illustrated this. And this really talks about what Cheryl mentioned. This is just in terms of the DSM-5 rates. And you can see that the U.S. side, at the top level, there's really a much higher level, and these are the volumes here. So this is one volume, this is another volume. This one here is greater than four drinks on average a day, so it's quite a high volume. But we still see a pattern effect, and you can see that for the U.S. at these high levels, there's a lot more sort of what you might say is binge drinking going on. And actually at the lower levels, much less difference in the two countries. So you can kind of see where the differences lie in this particular illustration. So now we set up logistic regression models based on this kind of a concept. So there's a volume effect and a pattern effect. So the pattern is whatever pattern it is at that particular volume. So it's one pattern variable, but it reflects the different patterns at the different volumes. And so we tested both U.S. and Mexico on off-border and the specific cities in our model. And all the models adjust for age, volume, and heavy drinking. Now I'm going to show you the men's result. It's a little bit busy, but I'll just say that we have, first of all, a series of models. The first model simply has the country effect, which is significant. The second model introduces the border effect, and you can see here there does appear to be a border effect. And then the third model is for Mexico. This is the U.S. border effect, and this is the Mexican border effect. Cheryl already pointed out they're in opposite directions, which is very, very interesting. These models introduce the city effects. In this case, it's for the U.S., and in that case, it's for Mexico. And you do see, as we said in Cheryl's presentation, some city effects as well. So it's kind of a way of looking at, in these different models, some of these effects that we saw in Cheryl's results as well. And here they are for women. Actually, there are some similar but not quite so strong effects. There is a country effect, and some of them are not significant, but one that is in Mexico, for example, there is quite a strong city component for women. So so first of all, just reiterating, we do see this effect that that Mexican drinkers on the Mexican side of the border have significantly lower rates of AUD, and on the U.S. side, male drinkers living at the border areas are much more likely to report AUD compared to men living in non-border areas. And in the border effect at the U.S. side, we did not see an effect for women. But on the Mexican side, the reverse order was seen. So my thought about this in part is that there, and I think Guy may have more to say about this, that there's a very different economic situation at the border where there are jobs, relatively speaking, and perhaps a different view of who's locating there and what their activities are. They're probably more related to economic opportunities. So the final one is that women at the Mexican side actually have a similar effect to men, but it's not significant. So Cheryl has really addressed this, and I'll just mention again that we found in our model, which is a very different model, confirmatory results to what Cheryl was describing. So more problem drinking on the Mexican origin populations than in adjacent areas of Mexico, and considerably higher rates of AUD at the U.S. border than inland. Reverse in Mexico. And the riskiest patterns are much higher in the U.S., and that you saw in the figure. Lastly, I think, this is not elaborated here, but will be much more in the paper. We have to try to think about, well, what kind of policy implications are there from this? And it's a little tricky because, addressing some of the border effects, one possibility that we're going to look at is the outlet density, for example, and other kinds of issues at the border. And of course, as mentioned, a lot of people may be actually doing their drinking in Mexico where it's cheaper, and they're less, particularly with younger men, there may be opportunities to drink in an uncontrolled way there. So, but how you address that without closing the border is unclear. So thank you very much, and I don't know if I finished in time to have any questions. Yes, Bill.
How much cheaper is it in Mexico? I understand that the off-premise drinking isn't that much cheaper, but on-premise drinking is.
I think that's probably right, and I think people going across the border are probably going to on-premise, situations to drink. For sure. Cheryl, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, it is on-premise, and they actually have, this is slightly dated, so it's not the COVID requirements, you might know more, but they actually sort of try to bring women in free drinks at these bars and all, so, it's really a great place for young people to go and drink lots.
Yeah,
Norman.
What's the difference in the legal drinking?
Well, I think... Guy, you can follow up on this, but it's obviously 21 in the U.S. because that's uniform, and 18 in Mexico. But I actually think it's probably not enforced very much. So it's sort of a virtual 18-year-old law.
But
very interesting step. Some of the literature, the U.S. literature, border effects, dates back a long time ago. You know, it was really easy for the people to come and go across the border, you know, just Saturday night and in a lot. Things changed a lot.
Yeah, we don't have a longitudinal study, but actually looking at this in a longitudinal sense over time, which we'd hoped to do, but unfortunately we didn't succeed, would have been very interesting because, of course, there are changes in the environment, and particularly when there's violence or perceived violence, it may not even be, you know, real, but perceptions do affect people's proclivities to go across the border. So that would be very interesting. Well, thank you very much.